not asking if you feel like you have a good grasp on all the details of Genesis through 2 Chronicles, because that's not what this class was intended to do, and that was not our purpose. But I do want to ask you how you feel on your overall grasp of these books. Pretty good? Fairly good? Yes, no, maybe? Better?
Fair.
Just use this material to provoke your own study and to go back. And again, there's so much detail that, yes, it would be a perfectly good study, a suggested study, to go back and look at these books in detail, study them on your own and what have you. But I wanted to put together something that just gave us an overview of each book of the Bible. And if we accomplish that, now I think the class will be time well spent. We took a lot of time, more time than what was initially intended. We are going to try today to at least get to the captivity and get our minds set on the books of restoration in the Old Testament. Then we'll spend some time on the poetry writings and then the prophets, and get all that done, Lord willing, by the end of December, so that the quarter that I teach next year we'll spend on the New Testament. The material's already done. You can be studying that and get through that. Any thoughts or questions about what we've talked about so far? We've covered a lot of ground. I appreciate the ones that's covered for me when I've been gone, whether their own material or they've taught from this material. In 2 Kings, in your booklet, the book continues to tell the wicked acts of some of the kings that ruled over Israel. We talked about that. Israel went into captivity as a result of what? Their disobedience as a result of their own transgression, their own sin. We talked about 2 Kings chapter 17, which was another pivotal, important chapter in the Old Testament. And I put that date on the board, 722 B.C. That's an approximate date. I'm not big on dates, but it gives us an idea of about when these things took place. The law of Moses was given in about what year? Remember us talking about that? You got a timeline in the beginning of your material anyway. 1400, somewhere through there. First five books of the Bible were written by Moses in about 1400. Some said 1450, whatever the case may be. But approximate dates. But I want you to see the point that Israel in 2 Kings 17 went into captivity because of their own sin in about 722 B.C. The northern kingdom of Judah was going to last for some 100 some years before they would go into captivity as a result of their transgression toward God. A lot of the prophets wrote during the time leading up to the captivity. A lot of the writings was focused on that because God was warning the people, this is what your condition is. This is what's going to happen if you fail to obey. This is what I'm going to do if you break the covenant that I've made with you. Well, obviously they failed to heed the warning of the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and others that would cry out to Israel or Judah, wherever the case may have been. So Judah's going to go into captivity. A lot of the prophets are going to be focused either before the captivity, during the captivity, or after the captivity. When you think about Jeremiah, he's referred to as what kind of prophet? Weeping prophet. Why is he referred to as a weeping prophet?
With all the distress and everything that's going on at the time, he was weeping for Jerusalem.
Yeah, it doesn't mean he was a whiner, that he was a weakling, but he was weeping on behalf of his people, on their degradation, their condition that they now laid in. When you look at Lamentations, why doth the city sit so solitary? And he describes how it once was, but it's no longer that way as a result of their own transgression toward God. But in all of that, God was still what? God was still faithful. Did God mean business? Did He mean what He... Absolutely. Just studying that with a group of about 8 people right now on the seriousness of God's commands. He was serious about that. When God said something, He meant business about that. Didn't mean that He was not compassionate, that He wasn't loving. He demonstrated that over and over and over, and He's going to continue to do that. If God wasn't compassionate, Judah would not have, what, after 70 years? What happened to him? We'll talk about. God allows them to return. All that in expectation of the coming Messiah. But I want you to see that point. Notice, if you will, in 2 Kings 18, verse 12. Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord their God, that transgressed His covenant, and all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and would not hear them, nor do them. There's a lot of points you could take from just that one verse. It's not enough just to hear. We've got to obey, and they failed to do that. And as a result of that, God used what nation to bring about His wrath and judgment on Israel? Assyria, verse 11. Later, God would punish the Assyrians. Some of the prophets wrote about that. Babylon was going to be punished. Edom, all those other nations whom God used down through time were going to be punished, because even though God used them to bring about His plan, God used them to bring about His wrath and His judgment on His disobedient people, they were still in transgression toward God. They did wrong as well, and God's going to punish them. It's not going to go unnoticed. And so 2 Kings deals with a lot of the kings and their unfaithfulness, the things that they did that they shouldn't have done. 2 Kings 18:5, He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after Him was none like Him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before Him. Who is that concerning? Hezekiah was a good king, right? So not all of them were bad. Not all of them were good. I asked you the question last Sunday, did Israel return from captivity, the northern kingdom? Did God ever promise to them that after a certain amount of time that He was going to restore them to their homeland, like He did Judah? They're no longer the focus of the Old Testament after their Assyrian captivity. Doesn't mean that God didn't deal with individuals. But the focus is primarily going to be on Judah. They are going to go into captivity, as we talked about last week. They are going to spend those, how many years? 70 years in captivity as a result of the evil report and their disobedience. But God is going to allow them to return back to their homeland. What prophet do you remember in the Old Testament specifically that foretold of the number of years that they were going to be in captivity? Jeremiah. Daniel writes some concerning the return. He understood by the years and so forth, and talks about his understanding. But Jeremiah is the one that I was thinking of. There may be others that talked about the captivity and how long that it was going to last. Northern Judah goes into captivity by what nation?
Babylon.
Babylon, right? They weren't a righteous nation. They weren't set on doing what God had them to do, but yet God used them. Babylon, by the way, is going to come to be associated with a people that would persecute God's people. Other nations would be compared to Babylon in time to come because of God's people going into captivity to Babylon. Who was the king that came against Jerusalem and besieged Jerusalem? We're going to read this second. 2 Chronicles and other places. Daniel.
Who was it?
I thought it was an actor, really, or something like that.
Now, look at Daniel chapter 1. And again, there's other places that you could go and you could read, and as you make your study of 1 and 2 Chronicles and so forth. Someone read for us verse 1 of Daniel 1.
In the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and laid siege to it.
Mm-hmm. Now listen, we'll let's spell check on that. It's pretty close, I think. But here it was, God is going to send him into captivity. Nebuchadnezzar is going to come against Jerusalem. He's going to besiege it. It's going to be wasted. And I want you to think about for just a moment about the best we can, what the mindset of the Jews must have been. They did wrong, there's no doubt about that. But to them, the city of Jerusalem was what? It represented, what was the city of Jerusalem to the Jews?
It's where they worship.
Yeah, the temple had been built there. Solomon had erected the permanent structure. Well,
dwelling place there.
Say it again.
God's dwelling place.
Yeah, God would dwell among His people at the city of David. But yet this beautiful, magnificent temple that you read about when Solomon built it, and you think about all the gold and the woodwork and all the things that I try sometimes best I can to think, you know, what must that temple have looked at like? You can Google that and see some illustrations of what the temple may have looked at. That probably pales in comparison to what the temple actually looked like. But their whole city is going to be destroyed. The temple is going to be destroyed. The gold off the doors and so forth are going to be stripped and taken away. The holy vessels, as Daniel begins to talk about in the first chapter of Daniel, those things are going to be gone. Things that were sanctified for a set apart for a particular use unto God are going to be gone. And no one has anyone to blame but Judah. And there were still good people. You think about the prophets, you think about others who lamented, who realized their condition. But yet they transgress the commandments of God. God is going to allow Babylon to come against Jerusalem. He's going to take them into captivity. And there's a lot of detail, I know, that you can read and you can study about the time in which they were taken into captivity, what the captivity must have been like during the time of the captivity. And we're going to look at the restoration in another class. But I want to give you some dates. These, when I looked at these, might be in your handout, but they certainly helped me. I put these in the margin of my Bible. And I didn't want to commit these to memory. But the captivity occurred in how many waves? How many times before it was completed? Three waves, right? Three different periods or years. The first one was 606. Now again, I'm not big on dates either. 597 and 586. But they would be taken into captivity. In other words, it all didn't happen at one time. Right? It happened over a period of time. In 536, you had the first return, and that's 70 years from this original 606. Dave Greg may have covered a lot of this in his good class on Bible timelines in 458 and 445. All these, of course, be city. Put that 516 in there because I thought it was interesting that that's the approximate date that the temple would later be rebuilt, that we'll talk about when we get to the books of restoration. But again, 70 years captivity, they were going to return. I thought it was interesting when you think about the condition of the Jews. We know that they were in idolatry, that they were sinning against God. God led them into captivity or allowed them to be taken into captivity. But what continued to happen with the Jews even though they were in captivity? What was the condition of the people?
They didn't repent at that point. They were still following the idols and stuff.
Okay. They were led into captivity to a group of people that Jehovah God was not their God. That they didn't serve. But here's what's interesting is when they came back out of captivity, did everyone come back? Did everyone that went into captivity come back? Were some permitted to stay in the land if they so chose, if they chose to do that? You're talking about 70 years that they were away from their homeland. Not everyone's mindset was, let's go back to Jerusalem. But many of them did. In fact, the Bible catalogs a number of people that went back under the leadership of Zerubbabel, however you want to pronounce his name, and Nehemiah, and the time of Ezra, and so forth. I thought that's interesting to think about their condition, their mindset. They're rebellious against God, and they're going to be in captivity for that period of time. Any thoughts?
Was that the time during which they hadn't read the Bible in so long? They hadn't seen a copy of it? You know what I'm talking about? There was a time that happened to them. They hadn't seen it so long that... who was the king that found it and started reading it to them?
Is that Josiah?
Was it Josiah? Yeah.
We just talked about that last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay.
And they had... That's kind of like the way people are today, aren't they? There's a lot of people... They're living the way they are because they have no knowledge of God. That's what the biggest problem is anymore, is that they don't have no knowledge. And I think that's where we need to probably start stepping up and saying, you know, this, because they're allowing all the technology that we have today guide them into a different kinds of areas of their lives, and they don't have God to lead them. And that's evident whenever I teach school, and I see that all the time. The students, when I say something in class, they don't know information. It's unfamiliar to them, and then there are some who do go to church, but then it's a denomination, and then it's all the information that's presented in the Bible. They know as they've been taught, but they haven't learned on their own. And, I mean, I try to. Say something and try to lead them and guide them, which I have to be really careful about what I say. And it's really difficult because they are very almost. Sometimes they'll say things that's almost blaspheming. Because I've warned them of that. I said you need to be really careful about what you say because you can say something here that you know. And they're not even frightened to even say it. It just amazes me. There's no fear of God and no honor.
No, knowledge is important. We see that throughout Israel's history. And it was never, as we pointed out in previous classes, it was never from the standpoint that they didn't have access necessarily, that God had kept them in the dark, that they didn't know what they were supposed to. Perhaps on a void of understanding as a result of the failure of generations gone by to pass it down to their kids. But God had revealed that to them. But again, we talk about Hosea 4:6, which immediately comes to my mind. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. We're going to talk about knowledge a little bit in the sermon this morning. But that's important. But yeah, that there was times when they were absent God's law, not God's fault, but because of the failure on their part to read the law, to study the law, to teach the law, to live by the law that God had given to them. Any other thoughts?
Talking about their mindset, when they went into captivity, Jeremiah, he told them, you know, you might as well house plant vineyards and that, because you're going to be here for 70 years. And that, and they didn't believe, you know, really Jeremiah at all. They thought it was a short time, they go back to their homeland.
And so it's hard to think about what, other than what's revealed to us, of what possibly could have been their disposition. One of the lessons we learn in all of that is we can't trust in self. No matter, we can go through all the things that God would have us to go through. We can come to every service. We can do all those things. But except our heart is in the right place and we're serving God, and it's to no avail. We can't trust in self. Any other thoughts?
Doug, when you look at God's judgment and the people that He used to carry out those judgments, all them foretold years in advance, the fall was because they accepted other nations' gods. And by those nations, God used those nations with other gods other than Him to carry out His plan. He first, Nebuchadnezzar in Jeremiah 25 is my servant. And so God gave them over to what they was wanting by the nation that they was wanting to follow, and use that nation to destroy it.
That's right. I think about Cyrus. He would be referred to as God's, what's the word? King James Version uses. Another version may use something. They referred to Him as His anointed. That's certainly one thing that everything those guys did was right, but God had a plan, and that plan was going to be carried out even by evil nations.
Nebuchadnezzar recognized that he was put in place because of God for a purpose. And the punishment that fell upon him. But again, God will give you a choice. You follow that choice, then God lets you lower that. Of course, He used those nations who they chose to follow as their gods to destroy them.
You think about all those statements scattered through the pages of the Old Testament. We've looked at some of how God would describe the destruction of Jerusalem. I'm going to remove you from the land. I'm going to remove you from my sight. I'm going to wipe you as a person wipes a plague. Just a lot of those are pretty vivid pictures of God's judgment against His people.
That application could be, if we choose to follow the world today, then God will use the world to destroy us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Any other thoughts? We've got a few minutes left. I do want us to think about, as we close the books of 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, Israel's removed from God's sight, Judah's in captivity, then the next period of time is what? Where the next section of books in your Old Testament? First five books are
law.
History, right? What books are included in that? What books?
Which division?
I'm talking about after Chronicles. What are those books?
Yeah.
Those books have to do with pretty well one thing. What is that? When you think about Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, what does that pretty well have to do with? You know, the return, the restoration, right? God made the promise, His people's going to return. A lot of blessings. These are short books in comparison to 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles. A lot of things you can learn from Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther. We're not going to get into the specifics of those books, but I want you to be thinking about God's people now after 70 years of captivity, getting ready to come back to a city that was laid waste. Well, before that happens, there's some things that need to be done. What might need to take place?
Well,
I'd say today a city is laid waste because of war and fighting, and people want to go back and inhabit that city. What has to take place? It's got to be revealed. There's got to be some things done before that's going to happen. When you look at the restitution, or the return rather, restoration, there's some rebuilding going to take place. We've done sermons on that before. Let us rise up and build. And if you don't know what that's talking about, you'll know it, Lord willing, when we talk about those books. At the end of the book of Esther comes the close of what? Chronologically speaking, the end of the last of the Old Testament history. All the other books, this was going back to our first class, all the other books in the Old Testament were written at some point within those books from Genesis through Esther, Malachi being the last one written to close out the Old Testament. So we'll talk about restoration, and when you think about the return in three different periods, under whose leadership was that? What took place under that leadership? And then after that, we'll spend some time, not a lot of time, on the books of wisdom, poetry in the Old Testament. And then the rest of our quarter is going to be spent on the prophets. Any thoughts or questions? Does it make sense? Yes, no, maybe. Is there anything that you feel like is just so confusing this quarter, and that is not going to hurt my feelings, I promise, that is so confusing that you hope that you think we need to go back and revisit for a little bit? Fast pace. It's just an overview, not anything we want to get bogged down on. If you don't tell me, I'm going to assume that everyone has everything that I've talked about, even though it may not always seem clear to me.
Hey, Rick. I
appreciate your good attention. We'll start with the books of restoration next week.